Hello, and welcome in to another episode of Podcast 63, Season 4, Episode 3. This week, we got to see some Loyola Ramblers play some basketball, and we are going to talk about it. I'm super pumped. Lou, how was your view from the rafters? Is it any different? How did some of the new players look from up there? How's the top of their heads looking?
Yeah, so definitely a sight to see, I'd have to say, right? Guys playing a full basketball was interesting, but also just excited to see some fans in seats. Last year we saw a lot of cutouts, and now we're gonna potentially see fans. So I think that was really cool. Overall, just ecstatic and excited to see this. And Drew was great. I think it was just kind of like, hey, he's. It's his first time doing this stuff. I thought he was a little over the top, but again, it was just, I didn't care at the end of the day. I was just excited that I could see really exciting basketball being played.
Yeah, I mean, you got the best view in the house. So, you know, they're adding chair backs all around. So I hope they remember you when they installing those chair backs and get you one up in the rafters there.
Yeah, I'll take one of the cushion ones that they sit on the court. That's
what I'll take. just buy a courtside seat for yourself. I like it. But yeah, no, I agree. It was super fun. It was just like awesome to be there and see them and be a part of the action again. So we're definitely gonna be talking about that. We have some recruiting news, a couple more offers, going out, and, then we're gonna continue with our season previews. This week we are going to be tackling the state of Indiana, and so we're going to deal with Valpo and Indiana State, give those season previews, and then that will be our episode. So thank you all for listening. Don't forget, always remember, go Blurs.
He jumps, he passes out to Hunter, Hunter shoots, off the rim, Brown gets the score, it's over, we won the ball game, Loyola won the ball game. Oh, we won 60-58.
And we are back. We are back, and so are the Loyola Ramblers. They had, like we said before, their open practice this past weekend on Saturday. And it was great. I don't really know, like, personally, like what you were expecting, but it was more than I was expecting. I kind of thought we'd get a couple drills, a little scrimmage, maybe, I don't know, something fun, like a 3-point shootout. But I didn't really expect it to be like a full on practice. Lou, what were, like, before I go into what actually happened, what were you expecting and like, how is it different?
I was kind of expecting more of a talk. I thought it was going to be not the luncheon or the breakfast. I know that's coming, what, in 2 weeks from now or a week from now. But I kind of thought it was going to be more just guys talking, saying hello, introductions, and then seeing a few like, okay, we're going to do free throws and we're going to do this to the rim drill and then a reverse layup, like boom, it's over. And we got a little bit more than we were bargaining for. I think we did.
Yeah, I mean, I think we got a lot more. It was cool and fun and really physical. That was kind of one of the things that surprised me the most. So basically, we just saw like a couple drills, like a fast break, layup lines, I don't know, some little dribble drills, and then
3-point just, competition.
That was, yeah, that's right. 3-point competition. And then pretty much Drew just like divided them up 6 and 6 or just around that, and we started a 5-on-5 scrimmage, and it was a full scrimmage. There was 3 referees there. They had the clock going, shot clock, all the works, really. As we tweeted out, there were a couple injuries of note. T.Y. Johnson did have a walking boot on one of his feet, or ankle or leg or whatever you want to call it. We learned later he just rolled his ankle the day before. We'll talk more about that a little later. And then Demezi Anderson, there was really no sign of what was wrong with him. But Drew did say later that it was like a lower foot injury. Which I don't know what that even means. But it was, they're still trying to figure out what to do and like what his timetable is. So, for one of the guys, you know, we kind of know everything, and the other guy, we pretty much know nothing. So that's,
I think it seems like T.Y.'s is really similar to like just a quick, like it just I think it threw us off that it was a whole boot, like for an angle. Right. But again, rather be secure. But Demezi's, man, it sounded like it's going to be a little bit more than like again we're going to wait to see. But I feel like you might not see come starting time. I really hope a month, but I don't know. No one really knew, so it's weird. But it just felt like it wasn't a simple like. Because like when he said TY, it was like, oh, he rolled his ankle. He was like, boom, had an answer quick. And then it was like, Demezi, we're going to get an MRI. We're not 100% sure. And I was like, ooh, like we don't know yet. Like, so that kind of like threw me off. Again, we're not the medic team. We weren't even the ones to ask. So apologies to the listeners, but someone else in the stands was like, hey, obviously two guys aren't practicing. Why? And we listened. That was an interesting side. And then I think it was one thing that I wanted to note, if you don't mind, Buck, about the drills before we get into like the physical game. The drills were all cool and all the thing, but one thing I think you and I just mentioned, I thought the listeners would like to hear, is like they're in the 3-point competition, besides Will Alcock and Will Smythe, the walk-ons, everyone was shooting threes, even Huddy.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing was, if you had Cam on this team, Cam wouldn't be shooting threes. There'd be no need to practice.
Oh, no chance.
For Cam to have shooting threes. So I think it is interesting to see the different kind of mentality that everyone's shooting threes. Ahir is looking better. Like, again, if you told me 3 years ago, right, Ahir would be consistently making threes, I'd be like, what guy? The guy who can not make free throws? I think, like, seeing guys like Ahir have really developed well, and it's funny that it took us just a simple drill to be like, wow, like, we're really seeing some things. And, again, that was kind of the bittersweet of the whole practice was – seeing even from a simple drill, just seeing Lucas do a reverse layup, stuff like that, you really see like, okay, like we're now back to seeing these guys in the Gentile, in kind of a setting of a basketball game and not just virtually. So I found it really cool in that whole setting, especially Ahir. Like I'm going to be all Ahir all the year. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting, like, you know, because I remember right when Ahir was going to play, like his first year after he sat out, everyone was telling us, oh, he's going to be so good. He's the best player in practice. And the only, like, bit of hesitation I have is I wonder if, like, what we saw at practice on Saturday is, like, what everyone has been used to seeing. And then if it is, then it's this other problem, right, of, like, maybe a mental block or something. Even though he played really well last year, so I'm not even going to go there. But that was just one of the thoughts that went through my mind is, like, we've always heard he's a really good practice player, and it's just always been an issue of, like, consistency and, like, putting it on the court when it matters. So, I agree with you. I thought that 3-point drill, that was kind of cool. Even Chris Knight was shooting them, and, you know, he was making them pretty respectfully. And they were wide open, so, right, it's a drill. Like, they should make, I would say close to 50%, if not more, of those. But, yeah, he was hitting them, too, so... A part of his game I had no idea existed, so that's cool. Any other thoughts about the drills, Lou?
I would say we'll mention here, but just kind of early on, the teams were just divided amongst. There was no real like, oh, here are guards, here only sit, here's potential starting five, here's bench. The teams were mixed up even in these drills, and that was an interesting thing I think overall that there was no like. Hey, this is the starters and this is not the starters.
Right.
It really didn't. I never got a vibe throughout the whole practice. And again, as someone who's trying to pay attention, it kind of was frustrating to be like, I would love to know who's going to be the starter. But again, I can, maybe it also is exciting that we have maybe a handful of guys who could fill a starting role.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's fun to get that little competition going. I'm sure it gets the juices flowing for those guys too. It's like always just competing in everything, right? They're used to it. So. I think we gotta talk about this scrimmage. It really, it was great. It was fun. It was cool. It was different than a normal, you know, like pickup game. It was kind of funny. Coach Drew was intervening. Honestly, he didn't intervene that much. I kind of thought he would do more. But when he did, it was like, okay, stop practice. What did we do wrong? Where were you on this play? Why didn't you drop down? Like, why aren't you communicating? And then let's do the play over again, reset, and start over. So he was letting the guys play for sure, but he would get his money's worth when he would call timeouts or pauses or whatever. So don't know if you. I know we want to talk a little bit about like Coach Drew. Should we start off with that? Maybe like how Coach Drew did, how you thought he did, or like if anything surprised you about him during the whole practice.
Well, there was one thing that definitely surprised me. I don't know if we want to talk about his kind of really pinpoint critiquing of one player.
Yeah, I can.
Want to go into that right now?
Yeah, let me introduce it, and then, yeah, you take it. So yeah, I mean, there's no reason. I mean, there's a lot of people there, so everyone saw it. He was really hard on St. Thomas. I think he was kind of upset with either, like his head wasn't really there, maybe he wasn't, like, fully concentrating, or just, like, wasn't making the plays that Drew knew he could. And he was. He would stop practice. He stopped it maybe two or three times, purposely for Saint, and would take him out of practice or the scrimmage and let him know, like, hey, you know, you got to get your stuff together. We expect more from you, that sort of thing. And my first take, and then you can take it from here, is, like, coaches, I mean, I don't know how many of our listeners played sports growing up, but I played a lot of sports all through high school and college. The coaches' favorite players are the ones that, like, they think the most of are usually the ones they're hardest on because they know that these players can do better. Like, if you know your player isn't that good or is just, like, there to be a athletic supporter or whatever, you're not going to be hard on him because – You know, he can't do any better than what he's doing. But when you have a really good player, really talented player, and is just missing or isn't mentally there 100% or is making the same mistake that he's always made, you're harder on that player. And at least for now, that's what I think this is. And until we see more, hear more, or, you know, figure out more, I think it's just, in my opinion, and I'm interested to hear what you think. It's just a coach being hard on a player because they believe in them so much. So, Lou, I don't know if you want to – if you saw anything differently, but go ahead. What did you think about Drew and St. Thomas?
Yeah, no, you kind of covered everything I was going to say. It was more that it was just shocking that there was already a tone set with Drew and St. Thomas. Again, I guess in our experience with Loyola – the last time we saw a freshman really make an impact was Cam. And nothing against Lucas, because Lucas was also a freshman then. But Lucas came off the bench, and he helped, but then he took a little bit more his sophomore year. And then, of course, his junior, senior, and then now his fifth-plus year, we're seeing him take more responsibility. But really, I did not expect – I expected more of Drew really going at Keith a lot, actually, just because it's like Keith, like, hey – set the tone as a point guard, set the tone as leader. And again, you saw that with Keith in conference play. Keith's aggressive. I loved that about him, especially in the tournament. So I just kind of didn't expect the St. Thomas. So it wasn't that, like, I wasn't thrown off. It was just like, oh, didn't see that. Like, I knew something would kind of be associated with him kind of focus on a player, but didn't expect it to be St. Thomas. But I would say what I found really interesting was other things, and just quickly would be like, Tom Welch, just for reference for those who weren't there, played a lot of just, like, filling in for guys, meaning, like, when guys needed a breather. So kind of almost a role man a lot. Hey, I need you to be part of the small setup. Oh, I need you to be in here, fill in for Chris Knight. So really interesting there for Tom Welch's kind of position, or position list, maybe you could say, almost. But and then for me was just two new guys. Not a lot of, like, Drew calling them out directly, but, like, Drew was like, hey, talk to Will. And then you could see on the bench, Ryan Schweiger. The oldest one is Ryan. Ryan Schweiger, the senior transfer from Princeton, and then Chris Knight, the senior transfer from Dartmouth. Both guys were very interesting to watch because both guys are new, but both guys were very getting critiqued. And they weren't getting a lot of critique, in my opinion, from Drew. They getting critique from their two assistant coaches that were there being their, like, head coaches. So, and we'll get into that. But it was just that was overall the player dynamic for me was interesting. And seeing how Drew interacts. And like you said it perfectly, Drew wasn't, like, pausing practice every 5 seconds. When it seemed like a media timeout because they went through kind of a game, it made sense. But he really was trying to let the practice go and have it flow. And then he made a comment, which we're going to, about defense, which is funny. But overall, just his interaction with the players was interesting and exciting to see a first glimpse of it.
Yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying about Tom Welch. I think it's good and bad. I think it's good because if he's being used this way, like fill and sub, like be the three, be the four, be the five, it gives him a lot of versatility. And like coaches already pegged him as that guy that's like the filling guy. So, but in the same regard, then you don't have a specific role, right? Like you're not like, oh, you're getting 10, 15 minutes a game for sure at the four or whatever. So it could be good and bad. I think really Tom Welch might see a lot of minutes, unfortunately, if someone gets hurt or there's some really unforeseen, you know, like someone's just really not as good as we thought they'd be. And then that's when I think Tom would maybe get like an increased role. But I thought overall he did good. I guess we can kind of just go down the line. I don't see why I can't go down like the roster a little bit and just say like any highlights or anything like that. And like we just started with Tom. I thought he did okay. Like I there was, like you said, I think the most surprising thing was just him getting playing time at like a lot of different positions. The next one that like just comes to my mind, Tate Hall. I thought he did great, actually. There was one play in particular where he got like banged up on a, he was coming back on deep or on offense rather, and got like run into and got knocked over and like shaken up. He got up and he got the ball right away on the 3-point line and drained a three. And I was like, that's just the perfect Tate Hall play. Like just, I don't know, like hustle. I saw him on the floor a bunch, of course, cause he's always diving on the floor. I think for whichever team he played on, maroon or gold, he was pretty much their main offensive guy. Put up, you know, 10 or 15 points in the scrimmage, super solid effort, I thought, from him. I'll do one more. I mean, you can comment on these two, but I'll just do one more because it's on my mind, and then I'll let you go. Ahir Ubak, I thought, actually, for me, probably was the most impressive guy on the floor. Not the best, necessarily, but just I thought he looked really good. I thought he looked really quick. He did a little bit of ball handling, which is pretty much the perfect amount of ball handling I think he should do. He hit some threes in the scrimmage. He got at least two, if not three, and ones. I think he converted the free throw on two of the three. Good on defense, good amount of steals. He was kind of going up with Lucas actually a lot, so that was kind of a fun matchup to watch. Any thoughts on those two? And then if after that, go ahead and grab a couple of other players.
Yeah, no, nothing more there with those guys. Excited about it here. I think that was a really exciting one. We can go into, I can say maybe, Braden and Keith. I'll talk about Braden. Definitely looked like he put on some muscle, really seemed physical, and really, again, it's one thing to see Braden, I think, on TV going at it, but seeing Braden get physical going to the rim is really actually something that is quite different in person. Cause you're like, what are you going up for? And it's like, no, he will fight to get up. And it's like, oh, okay, shit. He is not afraid to really get physical. So I think that's really something interesting for me, to really shed light on there. I think one of the other biggest things, was then Keith on the opposite side, cause they were on opposite teams. Really not afraid to shoot the ball. And so just like Braden, we know can shoot the ball, right? Everyone knows he can shoot the ball. But I was really kind of surprised with just Keith in person is not afraid to shoot. And so I think both of them share a similarity of not afraid to either go up to the rim in Braden's case or shoot the ball and be comfortable. So I found that really interesting and really cool, just because it's like, wow, damn, these guys are really getting there. So
snipers.
Yeah, I would say they're definitely like on the path to being that quick snipe, quick shot that we need in a guy. So I find, and again, you saw that with, especially in Keith's case, you saw that during conference tournament, you saw that with, kind of just toward the end of the season, I was really like, wow, I real feel confident Keith's shot. So happy to see those two traits back for both those two guys and really just excited to see them both kind of in that point guard, but really distinctive point guarding, styles.
The only comments I had about those two was both health related. Braden, there was a point where he twisted his ankle or knee or something and actually like screamed out and everyone kind of got real quiet. He walked over the sideline, stretched out and was fine. Both of us were like, just go sit down for 2 minutes. Just please go sit down. And he didn't. He just stayed in, kept playing. I'd imagine I was pretty sore the next day. And then Keith, we had a source who reached out to us to let us know that he was actually kind of banged up earlier in the season, wasn't 100%, wasn't playing all the time, and he was 100% at the scrimmage. So really cool to see both those guys get out there and go at it. And fingers crossed, I think Brayden probably had a lot of ice that night for sure and the next day. Next two, let's see with the guards, Marquise Kennedy. Honestly, like, this is tough. Like, it's the same old, but, like, better. Like, he just looks like Marquise Kennedy. He's so explosive. He's so quick. He gets up. He honestly, probably the most surprising thing I thought his defense was actually really good. He had at least two, if not three, like, straight-up swats, like, block shots. He blocked Chris Knight at least once, I think twice.
He blocked Ryan Schweiger at least once.
Yeah, I think it's those guys, like, don't realize, I think, how quick he gets up. But he looked great. I'm super excited. He looks bigger, I think. He's just such a great player. I'm so excited to see what he does this year. And then since we just mentioned him, I'll talk about Chris Knight. I would say that Chris Knight had the most, like, up and down day for me. There were times where I was like, oh, he's really good. And there were times where I was like, oh, he is getting backed down by Huddy in the post. Oh, he missed a layup. Like, I don't know. I think he's a wild card. I trust that once he gets in the rhythm of things and gets to real games, you'll see him put up some numbers. My biggest thing is defense. I do worry about his defense. He is a little undersized. He's 6'7". So yeah, for me, Chris Knight, I think he was solid, but I'm looking for more from him. Anything on those two? And if not,
yeah, I think just the Chris Knight one, I made a joke to you about that looked like an Ivy League rebound.
yeah.
And it wasn't that Chris Knight wouldn't know how to rebound. He's a very athletic, very, very athletic. That was the thing that surprised me. But I think it's just a different, type of pace. I think the Ivy League is a different, level, but again, I would say Chris Knight would probably only struggle potentially with like Cage Brim. Like Cage Brim is probably going to give him trouble because Cage Brim is a big body, very quick too. So when we get to that territory, also Drake, you can talk about Shaq, you can talk about, Bro, like anyone on Brody, that team.
Yeah.
Brody. So like those guys also have been in the year. So like I think that's where. But again, him against Evansville, him against Indiana State, Tyree Key is one thing, but I don't think he'll be on Tyree Key. But like when he gets to when we're in a small ball situation, I think he'd be great in small ball. I really do think he could fit well. But when we're bodying, that's where it's like you notice when he went up against Huddy even, or even not to be rude, Marcus Kennedy smacked the ball out of his hand. So again, it's just a matter of kind of getting used to it. But no, I really was excited with him overall.
Do you want to do two more then, or?
Let's go into Huddy. So Huddy and Lucas, actually, let's do this. These are two guys that are very at the beginning of their career and kind of toward the end, so I like this. So Lucas, kind of same old, very consistent with defense. Again, his offense is always going to be interesting to me. I love him as someone who drives the rim. But he does like to occasionally take the shot, especially from deep. I do remember, I think there was a deep three he made that I even said, I don't like that three, and he made it. But it's just, again, if I will watch Lucas Williamson play, I want him driving to the rim. I think he's really quick, and I think he's very smart with reverse layups, but also dipping it off. I think there was at least one where he went to the rim and handed it off below.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the Ahir. I think that's what you mentioned earlier. That was the Ahir Lucas connection. Very similar to what we had last year with the Cam and Ahir connection. This year, potentially, you might see Lucas here if crashing. So that's something you saw earlier there with Lucas. But overall, looking healthy, I think that's always the big thing, staying healthy with Lucas. Remember, 2 years ago, he had that health issue with his hand and stuff. But last year, all good. So I'm hoping there. And then Huddy. Huddy, man, definitely looks like he trimmed up and really exciting there. He's definitely looking more relaxed. Last year, again, very looked timid. In the post, and again, he's a freshman, and he barely played, and then all of a sudden he's playing in it against Illinois. So things can change, and I think has that focus of changing, and he's changing his structure. And again, let's be honest, we have the same we have a new basketball trainer, right, but we still have the same head trainer who kind of trimmed down Cameron Krawig, and I think you're seeing the same regiment kind of hitting Jacob Hudson. And it's a good thing, I hope. That's something really interesting to see. Just getting more relaxed, I think, is the key with Huddy. Just being relaxed. He's not afraid to shoot threes, so that's a relaxing thing. And then we'll see. I don't know what the play – they really didn't run, like, specific plays, in my opinion. They were just playing scrimmage. So I didn't see, like, oh, is he a pick-and-roll guy? Is he going to pop? Is he going to not? So, like, we know he can do both. It's just, like, I don't think we've – he's not played enough games to define his role. And that's really understandable. He's played maybe a total of, what, 8 games? So that's totally understandable. But excited to see both Lucas and him get on the floor like that.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing about Huddy you mentioned is how relaxed he looked. He did. I didn't even think about that. And so now he just looked normal. He just looked like he was out there scrimmaging. Like, the competition wasn't too difficult for him. He had his good moments. He had a couple good shots. He had a couple good rebounds and missed a couple too. So, and Lucas, I just love Lucas Williamson play basketball. I'm the captain of the Lucas Williamson fan club. So, it's just so much fun. He's such a good dude. So, why don't I talk about the two Schweigers? So we did figure out that the freshman, Ben Schweiger, his nickname is Lil Bro. So I think in honor of that nickname, we should just call them Lil Bro and Big Bro. I feel like that's easy. And we'll always clarify maybe like the beginning of the episode, just say it once so that people, if you just like join in, you know who we're talking about. But yeah, Lil Bro, he did good. I honestly, like, I had no idea what to expect from him. I wouldn't have been surprised if they redshirted him this year. He was really good. I thought he held his own. I thought he played a good defense. There's a couple, like, 50-50 balls he got to and dove on the floor for. Not too much offense. I think he did have a couple layups, maybe. At one time, I remember he did get blocked, which was kind of a bummer because he had a nice move to get to the rim. He switched teams a couple times. Like, it was obviously Drew wanted to see him play a lot. I don't know. I'm kind of more excited for him now. I don't think he's going to play a lot this year, but when he does, I think he'll hold his own for sure. And then Ryan Schweiger, Big Bro. Drew described him this way. Dude's a bucket. Like, he really is. He is a little different, I think, than a lot of the guys on this team in that, like, his first thought as a basketball player is offense. You can see it. He's always trying to figure out how to get his shot, get to the rim. He made a couple threes. I think he's actually going to be kind of a fan favorite, my prediction. He does remind me of Tate Hall a little bit, but I think Big Bro is a little bit more like in tune to like look for his offense, whereas Tate Hall is like would rather look to win a possession on defense and get a loose ball. But they look similar. They're similar body types. They're similar heights. They both can shoot the ball really well. But yeah, overall, the Schweiger brothers, even though they're not brothers, I was impressed. I thought they both looked good, and I think Ryan's going to get a lot of run time on the team this year. Any thoughts about the two brothers, not brothers?
Yeah, I'd say the one thing is, besides Ryan's real last name being Schweiger, something
right,
not
they
Schweiger.
Pronounce it different. Lil
yeah,
Bro
but we're
is
just
Schweiger.
Gonna call them. Yeah, we're just going to call them Schweiger.
Big one is Schweiger, which is silly. How dare they pronounce their last names different? But
exactly,
yeah, anyway.
Exactly. But I think the biggest thing just for me would be defense. And again, is I think they're just because I kept seeing Ryan kind of getting not chewed out by Drew, but like being like, hey, what's happened there? You gave him the baseline. And there was a lot of that. And then Will was just, I think, is just like trying to adjust and trying to be understanding of what's going on. I think you could just see kind of a freshman haze going on a little bit on defense. And that's fine. I wouldn't expect them to be stellar defensive players right away, but I'd say that would be my only concern because I like the way Ryan plays a lot. There were just times he got beat, and then there were times where he was aggressive, right? And I think even Will, now I forget that if it was Will who'd like picked someone's back pocket really quick and pulled the ball up. So.
You mean Lil Bro?
It might have been Lil Bro, but again, yeah. Okay. So defense would be the only thing there. Offense looked fine for Ryan, especially offense was great. Lil Bro.
He did have a nice steal. Yeah, he did.
So I guess the only thing is, like, there's more to come with Lil Bro, and then we only got a year left with Big Bro, so it's like, I think Big Bro can make an immediate impact. But I think they're both very interesting, and I both think they can bring something different to the table. Not one is only purely – that was, I think, the biggest thing for both of them. They're both not purely shooters. That was an interesting point. I thought they were both just going to be shooting guards, but I was totally wrong.
Yeah, I think they're forwards, like a straight up like a three, like a small forward where they can do a little bit of everything, a little bit of driving, a little bit of shooting, you know, tall, rebounding, stuff like that. The last player who we talked about a little bit, but I do want to give a decent amount of time to is St. Thomas. We mentioned it when we were talking about Drew, but yeah, something just wasn't quite right. I don't know if it was something like before practice, and then it continued in practice, or Drew was just upset with like what he was putting on the court that day. But yeah, it was clear that Drew was not happy with something. It was either like maybe Saint's like effort or attitude or something. I don't ever like to question that in a player, but it was very evident that that's what Drew was upset about. He played a bit to begin like the first half of the scrimmage. And he got taken out, and actually, at one point, Saint was sitting on the bench, and he was pouting or like had his head down or said something. And Drew looks at T.Y. Johnson, and he says, "Hey, go get your boy." And so T.Y., poor T.Y., he's got a boot on, and he's walking down the sideline like a penguin. And he walks over to Saint, and he sits down. And, you know, we couldn't hear what was going on, but I personally, like, my guess is that there was some play that happened. Drew thought Saint did something wrong, and in Saint's head, he didn't do anything wrong, and he said something back, like, "Oh, no, that wasn't me," or "I was here," or "I wasn't supposed to be there," and then that's kind of, it just kept going on from that. And I mean, the T.Y. and Saint connection, that's really cool. I think that's really something special, and it's obvious that, like, they already have this connection where, you know, they didn't play high school basketball together or anything. They just, they're roommates, and they, you know, they've only been friends for a couple months, I'd imagine a few months, so I think that's really cool. But, Lou, I'm really interested to hear your perspective. And then just a little bit on, like, what you thought, how Saint did when he did get in, I guess.
I would say the biggest thing for me was very much, I'm just going to say it, I saw Dante Ingram a lot just because of the height and the physicality. Not as quick as I thought, but maybe there was something just going on. I don't know. But I, from his highlight tapes, I remember seeing kind of a quick energy. But really overall, just I think the only concern was defense, and I think that's what Connie was getting nearly chewed out for a lot. So just totally understandable. And then I think once you get familiar with the playbook, that's when you can really, really kind of I wouldn't say shine. I think he can shine even now, but that's when you really, really can get comfortable with the system. So that's kind of the biggest thing for me. Again, I the height kind of was like, whoa, you're actually pretty tall. And even funny enough, Drew commented on how he thought St. Thomas was like only 6'5" because he only saw tape and he recruited him virtually. And then when he came visited him, he was like, "Oh, you're tall." So I think I was in that same boat of not realizing how tall St. Thomas was. So really interesting. I'm excited. I think I just wanted more with St. Thomas. But again, I think that was just because I was like last minute recruit. I didn't get to see much. And it's like, "Oh, you're here. I want to see more. Do all the tricks for me." And it's like, no, these guys are in practice. And even in a game, they're not going to do a 10-minute thing of dunking for me to see if they are that athletic. We got to just see what happens with the game. So really, I think he's going to be an interesting piece to see where he fits. And that's what we're going to be excited for. But again, this was practice, and I was really excited to see it overall.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, just, yeah, my last kind of note on Saint, like you said, I'm really excited for him. I think he's going to be a great player. I think it's really evident, like, it's not this super hard relationship for no reason. Like, I think Drew said it at the end. He's like, "I know that, like, he knows I love him, like, and I love him. Like, he's going to be a great player in this league for this team." So, I think that's just something we've got to keep our eyes on and watch out. And hopefully, he gets a lot of playing time this year to be able to show how he grows as a player and, as a human being, right? Like, as a teammate. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, any like last thoughts like on the scrimmage? I'm trying to think if we missed anything. They did some introductions, some of the new guys, some of the returners are saying like what they were getting their next degrees in, a lot of MBAs, a lot of like masters, stuff like that, which is really great. You know, these guys are students first and athletes second. So always cool to hear about that. The newcomers, freshmen, like where they're from, the transfers. It was kind of funny, like they had, since their two transfers are from Ivy League, they both said their degrees, what they got from Dartmouth and Princeton, and everyone clapped for the fact that they got degrees from Dartmouth and Princeton, which is really cool. But yeah, I don't know, Lou, any last thoughts about anything regarding the scrimmage, the open practice?
I would say the one thing I just thought of now and talking about it, we didn't get to ask, was what sponsorships guys have. I don't know if they would say it to us, but no one really, and again, I don't think anyone was really thinking it, but that would be an interesting side thing. Like, I know we know some of them, like I think Tate and Jacob, we saw a few of these guys had a few sponsorships. Again, we don't know what that entails. It's not like they've posted their details like, oh, I get $1,000 or I just get 5 free pizzas a month. Like, I don't know, but that is interesting. I would just be curious to see what these guys got, but exciting to hear them talk and introduce the newcomers as well.
One of the, just kind of regarding that, it like reminded me. So Lucas actually just on Instagram half an hour or an hour ago, I guess, he just posted like some cryptic message, very cool news coming soon. No idea what that means. Could be about his documentary, but it could also be a sponsorship. So we'll keep our eyes on that. And it just made me think of it because you mentioned it. I didn't even think of it like that. So could be, who knows? Open practice was great. Just under a month out now from games. So we're getting there. We're getting there, and we are excited about it. But from here, we do actually, let's just mention really quick, there were two recruits that were actually at the open practice. They're John Blackwell, who is from Detroit, Michigan. And the other one was, I have it here, Shay Eberween, who I know we were actually Shay's first offer, and he's from the Woodlands in Texas. So, I think we might like do kind of a more look into them. I just kind of found, I just kind of both tweeted today actually about the offer and stuff. So do a little bit more, looking, Lou, is it cool if we just talk about it next week?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Awesome. Cool. We'll talk about those two guys next week. Going on from there. So we're going to do two more season previews today. And like I mentioned, we're going to kick it off. Let's kick it off with Indiana State first. So Indiana State is actually coming off a pretty successful season. I think they were they third in the Valley last year? Third or fourth? Yeah, Indiana State was either third or fourth in the Valley. Because they got to 20 wins. And I remember because their old head coach, and of course Greg Lansing, he tied the record for most wins at Indiana State, but he did not pass it. Because if they would have beaten Loyola in the semifinals in Arch Madness, he would have passed it, but he didn't. And then he got let go, which is a whole nother topic for a whole nother day. Probably not right. But so Indiana State, they are going under a little bit of a rebuild, to be honest. They're losing Jake LaRavia, Trey Williams, Tobias Howard, and Randy Miller. The two, Jake LaRavia and Trey Williams, are super important to them and what they did. So those are pretty big losses. And then their biggest returner, Tyreek Key. Everyone who knows Missouri Valley Conference basketball in the last 3 years knows who Tyreek Key is. He is a perennial all-league player. Last year he was first-team All-Valley. He averaged over 17 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, a steal. And he's a great player. He is A-plus, class 1, but however you want to describe it, he's an excellent player, and he is a lot of what they're going to do this year. They have, so their new head coach, his name is Josh Schertz. He was hired after 13 years at Lincoln Memorial University, which is D2 school, and he is bringing along 3 players with him, who, like, two of them put up pretty good numbers, but, you know, very important to remember, it is D2, so it is a very different league. But we have a D2 guy of our own in Tate Hall, who came to Loyola and put up some good numbers as well. So, yeah, before I get into, like, any further, I'll let Lou take it from here. But, yeah, just a very different team we're going to see, and I think that's going to eventually kind of impact them this year. What do you think, Lou? What do you think about Indiana State?
Yeah, I think it's really, again, new coach, so it's going to be like, can his D, I think the biggest talk is, can his D2 schema work in the Valley, right? Is it like, can your, the way he ran his offense, does it work? And I think getting Tyree Key, to keep Tyree Key is key, and it is key. I'm going to say it outright, even though his name is key, because that's your top point, that's your top leading scorer. So if you can run everything through there, that's going to be great. I think the only concern I have is just the ball movement. You're not really returning any guys who really had a lot of assists. Now, two of the guys who have high assists from their previous year stats are two of his D2 guys. So not saying, like you said, hey, we got a D2 guy of our own and we know how that works. So, wait, it's actually kind of interesting how they can play right away while our guy had to wait. I don't know what that rule's all about, but
yeah.
I just thought about that as saying it. But I think that's kind of the biggest thing. It's like, can Sheets' luck from after his, like, what, 13 years of career in D2, which included, I think, four National Coaches of the Year honors and 10 tournament appearances in D2. So he wasn't, like, an average coach in Division II. He was in the top ranks. So can it transition? Can it work out? So I think the biggest thing around that was it's really going to come down to is like, does his track record connect? But he's only got Tyree Key for a year, so what is he going to do with it? Is he going to really try to see if his new guys can play, or just solely try to put everything on Tyree Key to get him a win?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a good question. And it, you know, and like what happens, like, you know, the Valley as a whole is extremely tough, right? Like, it's always physical and depth matters, and I don't know that Indiana State really has a lot of quality depth. So I think if something were to happen, you know, we hope it doesn't, but if something were to happen, I don't know how they would recover from something like that. There is one kind of really interesting stat, I think. Of course, three-man weave, we're using them a lot, and this stat actually comes from three-man weave, so props to them. And actually, they're posting it from, oh boy, where is it? It's like, Massey's comprehensive ratings, which I have used in the past. It's not my favorite one, but it's very interesting because Massey does all college basketball teams. So not just Division I, but also Division II, Division III, and, JUCO, I think. Maybe not JUCO, but definitely all three divisions. And ranks them, and his ranking system has figured out, or he's figured out, how to rank, like, properly rank D2 schools. And they actually, this past year, they would have been a top 200 team, like, just in total, which is actually where I think he compared them to Valley teams. So, yeah, for reference, Illinois State, which was the bottom of the Valley last year, finished 208th. Which is only 17 spots ahead of this division two team. So, I mean, it's a quality team. Like you said, like, this coach is not just like an average D2 coach. He's a very good coach, but still, you know, it's different things. There's different quirks you gotta work out. Traveling is way different. And just the quality of the teams are great every single night in the Valley. But I just really wanted to mention that because I thought that's really cool and a good catch by three-man weave. Let's see if he can do it at the D1 level. He's got three guys on his team from last year and an interesting transfer from Oregon State, De'Aaron Tucker, who I don't think got into our Elite Eight game, or Sweet 16 game, rather, but he is a big-time transfer. So see if they can do anything with it. Lou, any more thoughts about Indiana State or the coach or Greg Lansing?
No, just you got Tyree Key, who's proved a lot, and then you got a new coach who needs to prove what he's got. So it's an interesting mix. Excited to see what they got.
Where do you think they'll finish? Just like approximately in the Valley.
I think they're actually gonna probably end up ahead of Bradley. I think they're probably gonna sit in that. Let's see. Probably it depends on how Valpo does, but I think they could be sitting at 7 or 8. It's 6, 7, or 8. I'm gonna say that like that grouping of three, because I think Bradley probably will be sitting at the back end, and then Valpo could be ahead of them. So it depends.
Yeah, I don't think they have a ceiling of 6. Like, I think 7 or 8 is like probably where I'm sitting. Probably closer to 8 than 7, in my opinion. But yeah, so moving on, Indiana State. Thank you very much. On to Valpo. Valpo, interesting team. I mean, a lot of teams in the Valley are. I know that's like my favorite adjective, but they are. They have a lot of turnover here. They did lose Donovan Clay and Malik McMillan, which were, especially in Clay, very important to what they do there. Malik McMillan, a little different. He was kind of a role player, but still a solid guy that they knew could give 18 to 25 minutes a game and be super solid. They bring back a few pretty talented players. Ben Cricky probably tops among them. He is an all Valley player. I think he was all Valley third team, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe second team last year. He's a very well-rounded kind of power forward. He's 6'9", pretty good player, pretty good shooter. They bring back Aaron Gordon, who was, pretty solid for them as well. Nothing really spectacular, but just a good, role player for them. And then from there, just a couple of their other key returners, Connor Barrett, who was a freshman last year, was impressive, and Sheldon Edwards, who has been with the team. He's only a sophomore as well. Also another, sorry, I was thinking of someone else. Returner over averaged over 8 points and 3 rebounds. So, solid for them. But Lou, I know you probably want to talk about their transfers, and I think you probably know a little bit more than I do. So why don't you talk about some of the guys they got coming in there at Valpo?
Yeah, I think, though, just one guy I want to really highlight, just big about how impactful he can because of how he played against us, is going to be Ben Cricky.
Mm-hmm.
Ben Cricky is labeled only a junior, which blows my mind.
That is weird.
I don't know how that works out, right? But Ben Cricky is 6'9", and I know he only had 12 points a game. I just do think he can, I really do think he could potentially go off. But so that's one person I want to, but then it's really a matter of what they got out there. They have 3 transfers that are most likely going to fall into their starting lineup. And that's Trevor Anderson from Wisconsin. So really it's interesting. A Big Ten guard who really didn't see much playing time. You got then a forward, a 6'8 guy, from Michigan State. That's Thomas Keither. And then you have kind of the most interesting transfer, I think, that I would have seen because his name has been in big times, is Kobe King, also from Wisconsin. So they just took away all of Wisconsin's former players. And then there's Joe Headstorm from Wisconsin. He's 7 feet, so a massive presence, but really didn't play much. So maybe could make an impact in the Valley. We'll see, right? Mm-hmm. But I think the biggest one is Kobe King. Now, like Buck's been saying, we've been using 3-man weave as kind of a research, and they're really great, so please go out. But they note something in their research that King fell due to he has an ongoing NCAA inquiries and uniqueness of King's situation. He may not be eligible until the second semester. So I don't know if that's because he like left in the middle of, I think, January. So it was like the second semester of the year he left from Wisconsin. And then he didn't join, I think was Nebraska he was supposed to go to. So there's kind of a, cause he considered Nebraska. He was thinking about NBA, but he decided to stay in school. So there's a lot of things there. I think also I read it was really interesting that Trevor Anderson persuaded Kobe King. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so really just interesting kind of connection there. But I think if Kobe King – the long story short, Kobe King was considered nearly Big Ten Player of the Year a few years ago, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's going to be one of the biggest kind of talks from D1 transfers. But I do have to talk about one last transfer from Valpo who silently could make a crazy impact. And I just – only reason why is his name is Kavion Taylor. He's now coming from D2. but he averaged 20 points a game in Dang. D2. So the crazy thing is he's a redshirt senior. So I don't know if he's only got a year left. So I'll have to be intrigued by that. But I think that could be a very interesting piece there. But again, here's the sum of it all, right? Valpo has had history of getting interesting recruits from Seton Hall, from a whole bunch of other, like, decent schools, and they just, for some reason, don't work, and then they just leave. And then, now, granted, they did have a great pickup from Chicago, and then he left. And we're not going to say his name because he's on DePaul and yada yada. But they did lose, again, Donovan Clay. Crazy how that was allowed. Malik McMillan, like, that name was a name that came from a big school. So it's, like, just really interesting. So I don't know what the formula is, but I think it's great that they got a lot of guys. But Ben Cricky, in my opinion, needs to be a guy they really focus on and use these transfers as key pieces, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's going to be one of the most interesting things about how all these other new pieces fit into a system that Ben Cricky's played in for quite some time now. So I think that's the biggest thing there with Valpo. Long story, it's really going to be a tough one because they're going to have they could have a great year. I think my greatest line about Valpo, and this is where I'm going to leave it, is three-man weave calls them the island of misfit toys. And I think it's true. I think they get a lot of guys who never really crack top talent, but they could be top talent. But they also could just falter because they don't know how to put together the team. So really interesting, really tough to decide. But I do think they're going to be top. They're going to be middle of the pack, sitting at six or seven, depending on how things end up. And again, hey, they could be sneaky. That's all I'm saying. A few years ago, they beat us in the first round. Again, it was a different team, but always can be a sneaky game.
So I got a deep cut for you here. Okay. So Kevion Taylor played for Winona State. If you remember, we played Winona State in an exhibition game in 2018.
Yes, we did. That's Porter Moser's former teammate.
Yes. Fact. Yes, as the head coach, yeah, for Winona State. So, you two questions here. I'm curious which one you're closer on. What do you think, well, how much did we win by, the amount we won by in the next game, and how many, also different question two, how many points do you think Kevion Taylor scored for Winona State in that game?
Okay, I'm going to think we won by 24.
Okay, and what do you got for how many?
Yeah. I think he scored 9.
Ooh, okay, you're much closer on the final. We did win by 30. It was 82 to 52. And Kevion Taylor scored 25 points in this game.
Wow.
He scored almost half of their points. And he was efficient, too. He's 5 for 6 from 3. Sheesh.
So there you go. So he's played against us before, so he might know what's cooking. So an interesting point there. But really, Valpo's, they could have a great, great light at the end. They could have a good beacon to, like, keep their set on, kind of their focus. But I don't know. New name, new nickname. Will this team have a new result at the end of the season? We'll see.
Our leading scorer that night was Clayton Custer, 16 points.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, Cam had 12, and Cooper Kafis had 12 as well. So, I don't know, just some deep cuts here. But I agree with you. I think Valpo is pretty middle of the road. There's a part of me that thinks they could be, honestly, they could squeak in and be like 5, even if Missouri State's not very good, they could be 4th. It just really depends on Kobe King. Like, you know, like if he does play the whole year, That's good, right? Like, cause then they can get their team down, like their rotations, all that kind of stuff. But if he's only playing second semester, I mean, that's tough. You jump right into conference play pretty much. I mean, you might get like 2 games or something, or no, not even, like, cause conference play starts during the winter. So I don't know, man. I think probably this is the team that has the most like variability. Like I think they could be as low as 8 if they really like can't put it together. You know, if Kobe King can't play half the year, if some of these transfers don't live up, and then if everything gets put together, they could be the 4th team. So for now, though, I think I'd slap them in at number 6, in my opinion. But yeah, Lou, any last thoughts? How are the amenities up in the rafters now? How are you liking? You finally got some season tickets. They finally like addressed you, right, as like a human being. So, congrats on that.
Yeah, I think it's exciting, the practice overall. It's exciting to kind of windle down these teams. Before you know it, we're gonna have some starting games in Gentile that are not scrimmages. So exciting overall.
Me too. Yeah, it'll be a fun season. Thank you all for listening. We had a lot of fun at the open practice. We'll keep the content coming. We're gonna have more reviews, previews, in weeks to come. And, we're just under a month away. So we're getting there. So thank you all for listening. Always remember, never forget, go Blairs.